Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 7:18. David Zimmerman says, hi, Howard, welcome back. There's a show on Netflix which must not be missed. It's called A Life on Our Planet. It's by Sir David Attenborough. It explains the serious problem that the Earth is facing. And unless we change our thoughts and our ideas about life on Earth, we will become the next great extinction. The show must be watched by everybody, regardless of age. So it's interesting because sometimes I'm told to watch these things, and I have no doubt that it's brilliant, but I don't know. I find it hard to motivate myself to do it, knowing it's going to upset me. So I don't know how we, I don't know how we actually manage that. Maybe we can ask Dr. Carl, why do we put off doing those things, I guess, that we should be doing? Dr. Carl, a very good morning to you. How are you?
And Dr. Howard, good morning to you. Lovely to talk with you again.
Nice to speak to you. So it's interesting, one of our listeners telling me to watch this David Attenborough, I don't know if it's a series or if it's just a documentary, Life on Our Planet, and how important it is. And I know it's important, but yet somehow I just keep putting it off because I do. Is that normal?
Well, it is normal for humans to seek pleasure. Mm. And so food tastes nice. And because it tastes nice, we eat it. And then that means that we can grow from little tiny children into adults and stay healthy and then have babies. So things that don't make us feel good, we try to avoid. And if it's an unfortunate truth, we might avoid it. Sometimes you have to push yourself. So The example there is of the bodybuilder Arnold Schwarzenegger, who built up his beautiful muscles. He was in the Terminator series. He built up his beautiful muscles by going to the gym and working hard instead of lying around having cups of tea and a slice of cake and watching TV. Mm. So it is hard, and we each have our own different pathways towards enlightenment.
We do indeed. Eat like a king, lunch like a prince, dine like a pauper. So that's an old adage or an older advice that we've been told for years. Is that still the way to live in terms of weight loss and in terms of health?
Yes and no. It's really hard. So from a social point of view, at breakfast, you're normally in a hurry to get out and do the day's work. At lunch, you're in the middle of the day's work. But at the end of the day, you've got a few hours for you and your friends and your family. And it seems a shame not to just sort of think, oh, well, I might have some smoked salmon or a little antipasto or some blue cheese on a biscuit or maybe a sausage. Or I believe you Africans like dried meat. Is that correct?
We do. We call it biltong, and it is biltong. Dried. It's dried beef, air-dried beef, effectively.
Yeah. So from a social point of view, it's hard not to have your main meal at the end of the day because you've got a few hours to sit down and relax and join with people. And what we're talking about here is weight loss, and we're talking about a phrase you might not have heard of. It's called diet-induced thermogenesis.
No, I definitely haven't heard of it, but I feel like I could be suffering from it. What is it?
It's because food takes a certain amount of energy to digest. Right. You've got to break the food down into tiny molecules and then reassemble them again. And the reason that your gut does that is that if it has this barrier that stops big stuff getting through, it'll stop viruses and bacteria. So that's why you go to this extra problem of breaking it down, then putting it back together again. And I'll just give you some numbers. So assume that there's 100 units of energy in the food, and the thinking has been, this is just sort of like a guess, that it takes you 25 units of that of energy in that food to digest it in the morning, but at night only 10.
Wow.
So if you have the same amount of food morning and night, the saying, breakfast like a king, lunch like a pauper, lunch like a prince and dine like a pauper, means that you'll put on less weight if you eat the same amount of food in the morning than at night. And there is a small amount of truth in it, but it's hard to do the studies. And the studies kind of show that, but not all the time. And it's hard to do studies on people because you can't just lock them up for a year and feed them different ways like animals because people don't like that, and that makes perfect sense.
Right.
And the other thing is I had the weird experience of walking across Spain and eating like the Spanish. Have you been to Spain, Dr. Howard?
I have indeed.
Well, I noticed walking across Spain.
I never walked across Spain, by the way. I flew in, took taxis, and then I flew out, just to be clear. None of that walking across Spain business for me. Thank you very much.
Ah, okay, fair enough. But so you wouldn't have noticed, you wouldn't have joined people having breakfast in the mornings as in different towns and villages. Right. And what they do is for breakfast, they have drugs and carbohydrate. They have a cup of coffee, and then to the coffee, they will dip some bread, and that's it.
Oh, wow,
and
no
that's
protein.
Right against, that's it. That's all they have for breakfast. Right. And yet, even though they smoke cigarettes, which hardly happens at all in Australia, they've got a longer life expectancy than we Australians. So maybe that old adage, breakfast like a king, lunch like a porter, lunch like a prince, dine like a pauper, is kind of wrong. Although if you do have a fairly substantial breakfast, you do have less desire for sweet lollies and cakes later in the day.
I'd love your experience. 34519 or 0618951019. Roland says, how dare you say that lying on the couch eating cake and drinking tea or coffee will not help build muscles. I am so offended. And Timmy Grant employee say, good morning, Howard. Welcome back. Nice to hear your entertaining, funny voice of yours. I don't think it's a funny voice. I think I've got a very reasonable voice. Anyway, methane, the forgotten greenhouse gas. Tell us about this.
Well, since pre-industrial times, the amount of methane in the atmosphere has virtually doubled. And it turns out that molecule for molecule, the effect of methane in global warming is about 120 times worse than carbon dioxide measured over a year. But averaged out over a century, it's only 28 times worse because it gets taken out of the atmosphere by various processes, but it's still much worse. And the thing is that we can fix it once we realize what's going on. This is part of the bad news thing, Howard, where you don't want to know the bad news.
Don't know.
And
yeah.
The advantage of knowing the bad news is you can then think about
Absolutely.
It and make it better.
So if you can't name it, methane, you can't tame it, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So in the case of methane, 40% comes from agriculture, like rice paddies and livestock farming, about one-third from the fossil fuel industry, from leaks out of oil and gas wells and coal mines, and about one-quarter from waste from landfill and sewage. And with cattle, for example, you can reduce the amount of methane that they burp out by 95% by feeding them 1% of their food supply as seaweed. It turns out that certain types of seaweed will set off chemical reactions in their gut that reduce the amount of methane that they burp, not fart, they burp out.
Right.
So if you know about the problem, then you can fix it.
That is absolutely, that is something important. And finally, not all plastics are bad.
That's right. This was a real surprise to me to read this article in The New Scientist. Think about a cucumber, right? Mm-hmm. So with a cucumber, if it gets wrapped in plastic, then the loss of water is much less. You know, it holds onto its water much less, and it increases the shelf life by 60%. And it turns out that if you look at the environmental impact of it, the plastic only accounts for 1% of the environmental impact of having a cucumber. But if you throw away a cucumber, that's equivalent to 93 plastic wraps, and wasting food is very important. If wasting food was a country, 40% of all food that is grown is thrown away. If wasting food was a country by itself, it would come third in global carbon emissions after China and the USA.
That's actually unbelievable. In fact, I remember reading somewhere or hearing somewhere recently that we don't actually have a global food shortage. We've got a logistics problem.
Yes. The food is manufactured, it's grown in the ground, and then harvested, and then processed, and then shifted, and then finally it ends up in the wealthy countries in the fridge, where you come in the fridge and you see some steamed soybeans and some broccoli and carrots and cabbage, and you say, I'm just going to throw that in the garbage and order in a pizza. So in the poor countries, it gets lost in the production system, and in the wealthy countries, it gets lost at the supply system in the fridge.
Absolutely fascinating. I'd love your thoughts, reaction to that, Dr. Carl. Thank you, as always. You learn so much in this short period of time. It is 7:28. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.